Matt Whitaker, former U.S. Acting Attorney General.
This is such a great conversation about America, our future, what's going to save our republic.
We have a great football player. Matt Whitaker is here. Matt.
They tried to bury me. They didn't realize I was a C.
It's a touchdown. Whitaker.
Former acting U.S. Attorney General.
Under President Trump.
I'm going to be an unwavering supporter of law enforcement.
Welcome to Liberty and Justice with your host, Matt Whitaker.
Welcome to Liberty and Justice. I'm your host, Matt Whitaker. Today's guest is my good friend, Pam Bondi, former Florida Attorney General. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Matt. I'm so excited to be on your podcast. You finally invited me on after all this time.
Well, the truth is, and those that have watched all of my episodes know that I've been just trying to make the show good enough so that I can have you on. And with our early technical challenges that we just experienced, even trying to connect to this one, you can see, like, it's, you know, it's all JB Weld and baling wire and a little duct tape that's holding the Liberty and Justice machine together.
Well, it works great, and you have a great intro, too. I love it. And I was with you in Iowa when President Trump talked about you being a great football player.
Yeah, and you and I just saw the president recently, and he also said great things about you and I. I never feel like I deserve that, but I'll take it, right?
Well, he loved you. You're a great attorney general. I mean, you did so much for our country, Matt, and you continue to do. You're out there fighting every single day, and I'm blessed to be considered to be one of your good friends. You're certainly one of my closest friends.
Yes, and I cherish that because I think a lot of, you know, growing up is when you find new friends that you can build that level of trust that you and I have. That is certainly not only a blessing, but it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to you know, especially in the business you and I are in, to trust people and to, you know and like folks. So I really, you are a true patriot, and I've always enjoyed every project we've been able to work on together. I think, you know, this, since this show debuts on the CPAC, now you're going to see a lot of people that know and love you, and probably people that don't know you as well as they'd like to. So I'd actually like to start from the beginning. I mean, you are really a prosecutor at heart. You know, you
Matt, I lost you.
Started your career just in the courts, trying cases. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that, and then we can talk about how you became Florida AG.
Great, Matt. I lost you for a minute. I don't know if you can hear me now.
I hear you fine. Yes.
Okay, great. I can't see you anymore, but I can hear you fine. I think you asked about, well, I was a prosecutor for 18 years. I interned there when I was in law school, never thought I wanted to step foot in a courtroom, and then fell in love with it. I tried 4 jury trials when I was still in law school. When you do a certified legal internship, the Supreme Court lets you do that. I probably lost most of them, but it was so much fun. And I never wanted to do anything else. I never made a resume. I went straight from being an intern into the state attorney's office, stayed there 18 years until I lost my mind and decided to run for attorney general.
And so how, I mean, Florida is a big state with a lot of people.
And 22 million.
Yeah. How do you go about, I mean, you know, how do you go about running for attorney general of Florida? Because it seems like it's one thing to raise your hand, but did you have a primary? Did you, sort of have to go around? I mean, I assume you traveled the state in a circuit almost just through the election, but just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I did. I actually had a pretty nasty primary. I ran against a very nice woman named Holly Benson and a guy named Jeff Kottkamp, who was the sitting lieutenant governor for Charlie Crist. So it was quite an ordeal. I always say I'd rather get stabbed in the heart by a Democrat than in the back by a Republican.
Yeah.
And, he got pretty ugly with the two women running. But yeah, I prevailed. And so back then in 2010, when I ran, Matt, it wasn't social media like we have now. I mean, it was crazy. It was in a car. And, you know, my state is huge, driving from the panhandle down to the Keys. I mean, it's dozens of hours. It was crazy, just all the time in the car and grassroots and knocking on doors and meeting people and doing town halls. And it was truly running the first time meeting the people was a highlight of my career. And I learned so much. You know, we've just been watching, I don't know if you've seen, and digressing a minute, have you seen Dope Sick on Netflix?
I have not seen Dope Sick, but if that's a recommendation, I think I will have to watch that.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. It's all about, obviously, the oxycodone problem in our country and abuse. And that's how I found out about it in 2010, was traveling the state of Florida and getting to meet parents who had lost their kids to drug abuse. Matt, I couldn't go anywhere. Whether I was in Little Havana in Miami or the most affluent neighborhood, Windermere in Orlando, or the Panhandle, mothers are coming up to me, showing me, giving me pictures of their kids that they had lost to oxycodone. I framed those as my inspiration when I got elected. And so going around the country like that, campaigning and really truly meeting the people and hearing what people cared about and what was horrific for them and what was happening changed my life. And then I fought like heck for legislation to shut down the pill mills, which is what we had in Florida. Basically, in pill mills, there were doctors wearing, drug dealers wearing white coats. They were doctors who had drive-through almost service. They were just signing prescription pads. People were coming in there, getting oxycodone all over the state of Florida. And I mean, I was a prosecutor in Tampa, Matt, but I had no idea that was happening until I ran for office. So, you know, we passed now some of the toughest laws in the country against the doctors. And no more doctor shopping in Florida. So that was a big, when I ran, 98 of the top 100 oxycodone dispensers lived in Florida. Now none of them do.
Wow. And you know,
so anyway, that was my campaign trail, I ran. So it was, you know, it was worth every second though to do it. And hopefully it was so overwhelming. And you start off saying, if I can save one life, it's worth it. And that's how, you know, without getting overwhelmed, I think that's how, and I tell everybody that when they're running, just stay focused on helping one person, and then it just grows from there.
Well, and you saved countless lives through your efforts on that front that you described. And, you know, we first met when I was at DOJ and you were Attorney General working on sort of the new problem, which is fentanyl.
That's right.
And, you know, I think actually we made some significant progress. But, you know, Joe Biden, through his open border policy, has completely reversed those gains. I mean, I have to share with you that I love campaigning as well. You know, I've run statewide in Iowa, not as successfully as you have in Florida. But, I would agree. I think, you know, so much of it is the interaction with your fellow citizens. You know, I guess the fun question I would ask is, how did you find all that windshield time to make it productive? I tried to learn Spanish and also started listening to books on tape when I wasn't, you know, making campaign fundraising or, you know, calls to, you know, voters. So, but did you find a way to make some of that time productive?
Reading everything I could get my hands on. And then it really became about the drug epidemic too. Reading everything about that, that became so important to me. But yeah, and I have motion sickness. So that was a huge issue for me. And I was able to overcome my motion sickness by staying so focused, just reading giant binders, you know, old school in the car, and briefing books everywhere I went. So yep, that was how I stayed focused. No downtime.
I've found I have a hard time reading in the car as well, but I've found that as long as I don't have out of the peripheral side, you know, the landscape going by, I can read. But as soon as I catch that landscape moving out of the corner of my eye, then that's when I start going, ooh.
That's exactly right. You have to look down and stay focused. That's what I did. That's right.
I think also one of the frustrations, at least for me, is the food options on the campaign trail are usually limited to horrible choices.
Okay, so we don't want to talk about that. That is when I put on so much weight, was campaigning. And then when you're AG, nothing changes. That's so right. And the first thing I did when I left office was go on a big, huge diet.
Yeah. And there's got, I know, you know, if the Lord decides that there's an opportunity for to run again, I will tell you that is the, probably the most the habit I need to change is, you know, there's just too many great, especially this is going to surprise you, but convenience stores in Iowa. There's Casey's and Come and Go to name two, and they have their food is just like. It's too good, but it's just not healthy. And so you're eating breakfast pizzas and chugging down coffee and Diet Cokes. And then you're, you know, eating hoagies and all sorts of bad food. Mostly the breakfast pizza is what gets me at Casey's. But
well, and you're not running. You're not moving around a lot. If you, because you're always you're in the car. You're giving a speech. So you're not burning any of those tremendous amount of calories that, that you're intaking on the campaign trail. That's right. But so now think, we're athletes, Matt.
Exactly.
Now we're going to get in shape.
It's all about the mindset,
that's a joke.
Right? Yeah, but, it's all about what you identify as. And so we both identify as athletes. You're a more successful athlete. But
yeah, me, far from.
I'm aspiring anyway. So I think the first time you, I think your work as Attorney General in Florida was tremendous. And you obviously are well known, especially in your home state of Florida. But, you know, the first time I think you popped on the national stage was in when you joined President Trump's first impeachment defense team. Why don't you talk a little bit about that experience? So you had, you know, you all of a sudden were, you know, in the White House working with some great lawyers. And, you know, give the viewers and listeners to Liberty and Justice a little bit of sense of what that was like to participate in such a high profile event.
You know, when you're in the middle of it, you're really not thinking about it being high profile. You're thinking about the stakes and the consequences. They were trying to remove a sitting president of the United States for a perfect phone call to President Zelensky of all people in Ukraine. And what they tried to do to him, well, you know, we've seen it since he came down the escalator. But the fact that they took it so far as to try to impeach him, we didn't take anything for granted in that. And you know, you say you're in the trenches. We were in the trenches. I mean, we were at the White House till midnight, one in the morning, with Pat Cipollone, Pat Philbin. I mean, incredible people I got to be so close with. Jay Sekulow, of course, Jane Raskin, the whole team of lawyers and incredible, incredible support staff. It was just, and the justice attorneys there are amazing. The White House staff, they were so great to work with throughout all this. And, but you know, you never know. And then you're down there on the floor of the Senate and, you know, can't believe that Mitt Romney, a Republican, is going to vote to impeach the President of the United States. So it was an interesting dynamic what happened, but for the most part, it was good. I mean, it was good, obviously, because we prevailed and we pretty much knew we would because they had nothing on President Trump. But the fact that they tried it and they keep trying it, that was, we call it impeachment 1.0. Then there was 2.0. And now, you know, it just continues and continues and continues. But it was an honor and a privilege to be part of that team. And with Tony Sayed came in to help us as well. I mean, with so many great people on that team.
Right. Obviously, a lot of us watched those proceedings, you know, every minute of it. And, you know, obviously your, you know, presentation was tremendous. As you look around the room and you do a trial like that, I mean, you're a very experienced trial lawyer. So I don't think standing up in front of a jury is intimidating for you. But as you look around, Pam, do you see... you know, do you see these recognizable faces like Mitt Romney and Mike Lee and all those types of people, Chuck Grassley, and say, wow, I can't believe I'm in front of these guys?
Oh, Senator Grassley was a sweetheart to work with throughout the proceedings. Actually, all the senators were, you know, even, I can't believe I'm going to say this, you know, Chuck Schumer was respectful. You know, it was a professional atmosphere in there. I'm glad Pelosi wasn't in the room. But it was a respectful atmosphere in there. And, you know, we really didn't have, none of us really had any confrontations with anyone throughout the proceedings. It you know, professional.
Yeah. Good. Well, so now let's fast forward to present time. And now you are, You're doing several things, but a lot of your work is centered at America First Policy Institute, a group, you know, you and I
co-chair.
Yeah, you and I co-chair the Center for Law and Justice, but you spend a lot of time on the Constitutional Litigation Project. So why don't you talk a little bit about what your work on that is, because I know you guys have been doing some serious litigation in that front.
Yeah, we do. And it's pretty amazing to get to participate in that as well. You know, of course, you know, we've sued big tech, meaning Twitter, Facebook, and others. It's been, you know, President Trump is our main plaintiff, and that's going to go up to the U.S. Supreme Court, we are certain. We got removed from Florida, shock, you know, and taken to California. So we knew it would be an uphill battle once that happened, because, of course, they're all headquartered out there. So we knew that would happen. But this is going to continue up to the Supreme Court, and I think there's going to be a really good ruling. But one, Matt, that I'm so personally involved in right now is an amicus brief that we wrote. We joined in, actually, with Chris Kobach about our Air Force men and women and personnel who are being fired from the Air Force for refusing to take the vaccine for religious purposes. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are, and now look at what's happening in our world. I mean, these are fighter pilots. These are linguists who speak Russian. Some speak Chinese. I mean, it's crazy what they're doing. Yeah. And they have strong religious beliefs and they will not get vaccinated. So they are firing them from the military. And when I say firing them, it's not exactly a dishonorable discharge that they're trying to do, but it's the equivalent of it, that people will know that they left under bad terms. They don't get their pension. I mean, it's horrible what they're doing to them. And so we're fighting that every step of the way. And I'm so proud to be part of that and to get to know personally a lot of these people in the military who are going through this. But Matt, it's a different world when they're doing that, you know, when they're doing that to our great men and women in uniform who are out there fighting for our country.
Yeah, it seems like they're really trying to undermine the future of our country, not only through, you know, these vaccine mandates to the military and getting rid of some of the best and the brightest without even giving them a chance to, you know, express deeply held religious beliefs. But now, you know, the suggestion that they're going to force kids to get vaccinated before they can go to school. I mean, it's for the COVID, and that is what I think this administration is completely out of control. And I guess we should have known that after 8 years of Obama, that if Joe Biden came in with the same kind of people, that they would try to do the same kind of lawless acts. But it's just it's breathtaking, especially I'm sure when you're litigating against them on these policies, you know, an experimental vaccine that has not been going through the rigors through a, you know, a sort of a, I don't know, an innovative at best method of delivery through the mRNA system. I just, you know, I'm glad that you all in the other center there at AFPI, or one of the other centers, are taking that on. I think those warriors need our help. And, you know, like to your point, like what a bad time to go after these folks when we need them the most, you know, fighter pilots and linguists and really everybody that serves our country, you know, should expect more from their commander in chief. But, you know, this is what we get.
But they're our heroes.
Yeah. No
doubt. And that's one of the things when I first got to know you that made me like you so much was how you've always stood up for our men and women in blue, whether it's our law enforcement or our military, always, all of our first responders.
Yeah, and that's one of the goals of this show is to not only highlight law enforcement. You know, we've had Sheriff Lamb on this show. We've had other attorneys general, and now we have you because we were ready to have you, you know, sort of the old saying is, you know, when you're ready, when you're ready to learn, the teacher will appear. Well, when your show's ready, the best guests will show up.
You're letting me in the boys club. This is good.
Well, so a couple folks have pointed out the lack of gender diversity on this show, and I am determined to balance that out as best I can. But we still have our core audience, which is, you know, why I'm going to transition to our next topic. And I'm just going to say one word, and this is not Joe Biden one word, but
a real one
maybe
word.
Maybe it's actually two words, but Champa Bay. What's that mean?
Woo! It sure does. Yeah, we've got, we love the Tampa Bay Bucks. we're not doing so great this season so far, but we always come back and do great. And obviously we have Tom Brady, who everyone loves. And, you know, my neighbor right down the street is Cameron Brate, who got injured pretty badly. I don't know if you saw last game. He was taken out on a stretcher, but he's back home and doing well. But, you know, lots going on, and I love our coach, Todd Bowles. We've got such a great coach. And, you know, they're even going after him. Have you seen that on the news, Matt, what they're trying to do to Todd Bowles? Not going after him, but saying things, trying to cause a racial divide in football. If anything in this world brings us together, it's football. It's sports, right? Unless you have a man and women swimming, but that's a story for another day. But it's football. And, you know, so they start talking to Todd Bowles. I'm sure your viewers have all heard this, but saying you guys and the way you grew up about Todd and another black coach. And he just responded so well and so eloquently and said, you know, basically, you people are the ones causing this divide. Right. And it's he doesn't see himself any differently. No one sees him. He's a phenomenal football coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And, you know, they just try to, the media, just trying to cause these divisions still in our world.
Yeah. And they hate it. You know, you see the same going on in Arizona with Kerry Lake. Well, they hate it when it's turned around on them and their assumptions are challenged. They don't have an answer because their agenda is, you know, blinds them to believe this narrative. I mean, if you disagree with kind of their narrative, they stammer and are almost like a does not compute situation with a
right?
robot. I mean, they just kind of they don't know how to react. I mean, I think coach is so smart, you know, to not take the bait, to not, you know, sort of
suggest. And call him out.
Called him exactly.
Out. It was great.
You know, he handled it so well. And anybody that hasn't seen it should, you know, it's only a couple minute interview, part of an interview, but it's so worth your time to watch the coach for Tampa Bay suggest, you know, just push back on this suggestion. But, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, we, and I've said this several times, but we as citizens of the greatest country in the world and the greatest, you know, idea ever conceived by human beings, and it's, you know, obviously, I believe inspired and blessed by God, have one charge, and that is to create a more perfect union. Not a perfect union, but a more perfect union. And I think, you know, American history should be celebrated, but it should also be reflected upon and look for ways that we can improve our society as a whole. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, if we have, you know, a growth mindset, we were talking about mindsets earlier, being an athlete, but if you have a growth mindset that, you know, you can get better, we can get better as a country, you know, but we need better leadership. That's where it boils down to. You know, we need better leaders. We need to elect a better class of people. We need to, you know, not have these, you know, lifetime career politicians, you know, that unfortunately have not, have no skills other than be a politician. I think, you know, society isn't as good without.
Well, and I feel like, Matt, too, some of these guys have a sense of entitlement, you know, because of their name. They feel like, you know, that they should be in office forever. And then I feel like that's when they become too out of touch with their constituents and their voters. And, you know, when I ran for AG, I said I was 2-term limited, and I go, 2 terms, I'm out. Not running for office again. And from 2010, I've never wavered on that. Never wavered. My choice, you know, that I wanted to be a 2-term attorney general, and that was it. But I went up there to make a difference, and hopefully I made a small difference. But but knowing, though, that I didn't want to continue on. And in Florida, we have term limits, which are a great thing. Great thing in my state. And I live in a free state as well. So do you.
I'm a big fan of Florida. Everyone that knows me knows that, especially Florida beaches, because, you know, I'm always so well tanned and love the sun so much. But, well, Pam, I just thank you for taking the time. We're going to have you on again, you know, in the coming months. This is the first season of Liberty and Justice.
Yeah.
I've tried to bring on the people that I know, love, and respect, and there's really nobody that I know, love, and respect more than you, because you are such a great patriot. You always say yes. You raise your hand. You are willing to be uncomfortable while you figure things out if you're, you know, on this, a new project. And I just admire you so much. So thank you for everything you do. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Matt. Invitation, come down to a Tampa Bay Lightning game with us.
I can't wait. I'm a huge hockey fan, as you know. And so we'll
take just wait. We're on the ice. Come down with us.
All right. Well, thank you, Pam Bondi, for being on Liberty and Justice. As you, everyone knows, you can catch everything I'm doing at Whitaker.tv. This show premieres every Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern on CPAC Now. And then, of course, if you want to listen to it everywhere, the good podcasts are distributed. So thank you, Pam, and we'll talk to everybody soon.